You're listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, listener-supported, open-source, grassroots community radio, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa. This is Writers' Voices. I'm Shemaine Montana, hosting for Monica Hadley, and with me is our regular co-host, Caroline Kilborn. How are you today?
Fine, fine. Weathered the storm and doing good.
Great. Well, today we're talking about a fascinating book Talk to the Animals. And the authors are Dr. Dane Heer and Gary Douglas. Gary Douglas is known worldwide as a phenomenal horse whisperer. Gary rode his first horse at the age of 2 and has created a relationship with animals that is beyond what most people have experienced. Gary is the founder of Access Energy Transformation, which is about empowering people to know what they know and increase awareness and consciousness for themselves. Gary Douglas travels the world extensively, facilitating seminars and assisting individuals to function as the greatness of them rather than the finiteness of them, and to focus on greater freedom, consciousness, and awareness of their talents and abilities. Gary says, "Everything on this earth has consciousness. Everything. If you start to function with the consciousness of things, they will tell you what they would like and how to function with them. This is especially true of animals." Dr. Dane Heer is an access facilitator and chiropractor who has extraordinary talents and abilities working with people and animals with their bodies to create greater ease now and in the future. Dr. Heer also travels the world facilitating seminars with Gary Douglas and Access Energy Transformation, assisting people and animals to have greater freedom with their bodies and beings. Dane is the author of Embodiment, the manual you should have received when you were born. That sounds interesting, which encourages you to function with your body as an ongoing source of joy. And the two have written a few other books together, Money is Not the Problem, You Are, Magic, You Are It, Be It, Sex is Not a Four-Letter Word, But Relationship Oftentimes Is, and The Joy of Being Alive. So welcome, Gary and Dane.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you with us today.
Good to be here.
Fascinating, fascinating book, really. And the POD and the POC, I mean, That's really something. That's really something. We'll get into that.
And that's the important thing.
So tell us, give us an introduction. How did this book come about?
Well, it actually came about because a number of years ago, somebody asked me if I could do the access work on people, that we do on people, on animals. And I said yes without even realizing I'd said yes. And then somebody asked me to come to their house and do an animal class. And there was one bizarre event after another that made me realize that animals are a lot smarter than people because they'll let go of anything instantaneously.
We always have to analyze
it and figure out what's going on before we let go of stuff. They don't.
You just have to give them a chance to let go, and then they will do it, won't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had a spiritual teacher once say, if you're getting rid of stress, you don't sort. When you throw out the compost, you don't sort it and say, oh, this is from last night's dinner, and this is from 2 days ago. You just get rid of it.
Exactly, and the thing about animals is they'll get rid of it instantaneously, where we people have to look through the garbage to find out what we're really going to let go of as opposed to just letting go.
And the other aspect of creating this book was the awareness that there are a lot of times where people will, in reference to animals, they'll receive an awareness like, oh, I got this from an animal, so it must be okay, whereas if you tell them, they're going to refuse to receive it. So we created Talk to the Animals based on this awareness that the animals have so much awareness that they would like to share, and people are actually willing to receive it from animals where they might not from another person.
Interesting. Or with people, do they want to double check or they second guess themselves?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And with animals, they just trust.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, so many of us as kids, it's like we knew something and we would be told something different and told that the thing that went against what we knew was actually truth and that our knowing wasn't. So we know we're not getting that with animals, so we don't necessarily have to double check.
Right, right. Well, give us a little introduction on what Access Energy Transformation is, since this book is about using access with animals.
Well, Access is a set of tools and techniques that allow you to unlock any part of your life that isn't working so that you can have a different result in it. And it's a pragmatic system that works, designed to help you achieve whatever it is you don't seem to be able to achieve. Brady.
Your website has some wonderful video testimonials of people who've had good results with it.
Yes, we've had good results, and we've had, you know, amazing results with the animals as well, which is sort of the phenomenal gift that all this is with the people and the animals. It's just wonderful.
Because it goes, well, with that saying, if you keep doing what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always gotten, right? Yeah.
That's correct.
So, in one of your bios, it says you created Access, but I read in a different bio of yours that you felt that it came through. Can you talk a little bit about how it first appeared to you?
First appeared, I was channeling a number of years ago, and it first appeared during that process. And then I was told I had to give classes, so I gave classes. And then one day they just walked away and left me alone and said, get to work.
That was in 1990?
Yes.
Was it? And then I read that as you gave classes, the work evolved. The work and the techniques evolved through input from the students. Is that right?
That's correct, because basically my point of view is, you know, actually our point of view is, because Dane has discovered that it's true as well, is that when people come to the classes, they will give us a piece of information that nobody else has ever given us and probably nobody else knows. And they, you know, it's like when they do, it changes Access and it changes everybody that comes to Access. You know, it's like I consider every person who comes an amazing gift.
Because we all bring a different perspective.
Yes, we all have a different energy, and it's like our, you know, whatever we, whatever secret we have to the universe that we haven't shared, when people come to Access, they seem to share their secret, and it opens the door to a totally different possibility as a result of it.
Mm-hmm. And Dane is your business partner and also a significant contributor to the process, right?
Yes, a significant contributor to the process. He's more willing. He does amazing stuff himself with people's bodies. I actually met him as a result of, I was having serious physical problems, and he was doing network chiropractic, and I went to him to get the network chiropractic work done. And I said, don't bother with number one and number two because they don't work on me. Go directly to number three. And he goes, well, I've just started that course, and I really wanted to say to him, I'm psychic, dude. I know you haven't done the course. But I didn't. I said, okay, well, just talk to my body and do whatever it tells you. And he did, and as a result of that, it's like I went from actually knowing I was dying to knowing I was going to survive. And it was an amazing gift. And that's the moment I went, please, God, can I have him?
Hmm.
If he can do that kind of stuff for me, he can do it for others as well.
Hmm. Now, somewhere in your materials, I read that the first time he did Access Energy Transformation on you, it saved your life.
That is correct.
So are you calling that...
Talking about he did this, you know, this thing of following the energy.
Mm-hmm.
What Access is really about, following the energy, and from the energy you learn what is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And he followed the energy and did that, and he saved my life, and he's done it two other times since then.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you,
because,
well,
the man a lot.
Yeah. So through that, you really got on the soul level that you were intended to stick around.
Yeah, I got, you know, I was actually, oh, good, I get fun. You know, and it's like, and suddenly I couldn't leave. I was gonna have to go, and that was, you know, it was a real gift to have him do that for me. And the net result of it all was that I knew I was gonna live instantaneously when I got up off the table. And I've watched him do miracle after miracle with different people and with animals that just, you know, blows me away. He has amazing talents.
Hmm.
It's cool to have somebody who's that talented around, you know?
Yeah, so you wanted him to partner up with you, and you got him.
Well, originally I didn't ask for him to partner up with me. I just asked him to go to work for me. And he did that, and then slowly it worked into a partnership. And and now we do, it's like he does the energy work he does, which is called the energetic synthesis of being. And it's like literally about opening the doors to the energy of being that you really are, rather than trying to do being from thinking. And he does miraculous stuff with those things, and he does that in the back of the class while I'm doing the access processes in the front of the class, and everybody gets better.
Wow. Beautiful.
So it's a great combination, a great putting together of energies that create a different result.
When you work with people or animals, and you
we work with, it works with people, it works with animals as well. It's faster with animals because animals don't try to hold on so hard.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it's like whatever occurs, we're just grateful.
Do they ever revert back to their original state of mind, state of...
The animals will revert back if their owner is not willing to change their point of view.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
We had a horse that was lame that we worked on in San Francisco one time, and it got over its lameness in half an hour.
Mm.
And it was not lame for 2 weeks until its owner came to visit, and she had decided she didn't want to have to ride anymore. And she walked in, and the people said, oh, the horse is no longer lame. And she went, oh. And she was not happy, and instantaneously, the horse went lame again.
Hmm.
Wow.
He'd been walking totally sound 2 minutes earlier.
Hmm. I have a friend who's...
As owners can project on the horse what we want them to do or be, that creates a lot of the results that occur.
Yeah. I have a friend who's a professional animal communicator, and she talks about needing to go through the owner to get the energy of the animal sometimes. Say if there's a missing animal, she'll tune into the owner's energy and get pictures that way.
Yes, I can do that with owners. I actually have done that with dog walkers as well. I have a friend who was a dog walker, and she would periodically she'd have a dog that would run away, mm-hmm. and this dog would just take off, and she would spend hours trying to find him, and I would tap into her and say, okay, so go here and try this. And she would, and there he would be, which was always very funny.
Yeah, I'm sure. Very gratifying to her that you
very
could do
gratifying.
That. Yeah, I'm
it was
sure.
gratifying to me, too, because it's like, you know, you never know whether you're actually correct or not until you get feedback.
Yeah. Well, that story of the dog who was Igor, who wanted to be Skippy, I love that story in your book.
I know. Isn't that funny?
I have told that to more people.
I know. It's sort of fun. I mean, that you know, it's like this... dog wanted to be called, you know, he was called Igor, and he would bark and act up and be out of control. And, you know, it's like, I actually, Susie Godsey, who's a dog walker here, she actually asked for a dog class, and we had 17 dogs and 5 people. And,
oh my
you
gosh.
Know, and so Igor came up, and I said, what's wrong? And he says, I hate my name. So what do you want to be called? Skippy.
Well, if my name was Igor,
I'd
want
to... You know, and then she just said, I can't do that. His name is Igor. Uh-huh. And so for 3 weeks after that, he was obnoxious. And she said, you know what? I can't handle this dog. I got to give him away. So Susie found somebody who would be interested in taking him. And she brought him over, and they said, well, we don't like the name Igor. Can we call him Skippy?
I love that. That is so
bad. You know, and it's just like, okay, cool.
Well, the dog communicated to them.
The dog has his own name, yeah. Gotcha.
Well, all animals have their own point of view, and a whole lot of times when they're misbehaving, it's because they don't like their name.
Okay.
It's sort of, unfortunately for them, it's one of the only ways they can communicate with us and try to get us to ask a question to look at what their point of view is that misbehaving? And mm-hmm. especially with this name idea, it's amazing to see the number of animals that are misbehaving solely because they want their name changed. Really interesting to see.
Yeah, I'll say.
And really, that story is another example of how you guys have to work with the owner and maybe heal the owner a little bit. Not heal, but facilitate some openness.
Try to make them less insane if possible, you know?
Sure. Right.
Yeah, because they're closed.
Which like a whole lot of owners think that they have the answer and they know what's right for the animal instead of asking the animal a question.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I just moved recently and I had a kitty where I was and he was just so agitated because he knew something was up and I couldn't seem to comfort him. And then I left and he stayed in the household where I was with my aunt and I called my aunt and she said, well, as soon as you left, he was fine. So I tried not to be hurt, but...
Well, he was picking up on your anxiety about moving.
Yeah.
And, yeah, probably.
Right. And then as soon as I was gone, then my aunt felt like the cat just felt like, okay, now I know what's happening. I'm sticking around. And I just tried to tell Kitty that he had a home and he was going to be all right.
Yeah, that's great. I had a friend who had that going on with a cat that she was trying to move, and I said, well, tell him you're going to take him to a new hunting ground.
Ah.
Oh, I remember that part. I remember that part in the book, yeah.
Good and
idea.
That worked tremendously.
Yeah.
Good
and the part about, I have heard of cats bringing dead mice and dead birds to the doorstep, you know, and you explained why they do that. That's cool. Yeah, that really is.
Yeah, what was your explanation?
Well, and, you know, it's like when a cat in particular, if a cat really, you know, cares for you a lot, they'll bring dead mice to you and leave them on your doorstep or bring them into your bed for you and stuff.
Oh,
you know they care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is a gift. I'm giving you my hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm giving you my food. It's sort of like the feline proclamation of unconditional love, you know. Here's a dead animal for you. This is how much I care about you.
Oh, that's neat.
It's always amazing to me because, you know, it's like we always assume, oh, my God, would you have to kill that thing? They do. That's their nature. You know,
yeah,
it's like that. You know, and that's the other thing I found interesting in doing this book is I found that a whole lot of people call me up and said, wow, I'm so glad you told me that this was the animal's nature because I had never thought of that, which amazed me, because I always assumed people would look at the nature of an animal to determine what they were going to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't seem to be so.
Did you ever work with chimpanzees?
With what?
Would you ever work with chimpanzees?
I haven't worked with chimpanzees. I have worked with other primates, though, other monkeys. Actually had the experience of going to a animal rescue place where they had some rhesus monkeys that had been used in experiments for cosmetics.
Oh, yes. I remember that part. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was an amazing, you know, it's like what became very obvious to me instantaneously is that these animals communicate telepathically.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's like, to me, the whole idea of animal research is wrong because they'll share information with one another even if they're on, you know, even if they're miles away, they'll still share information. And they sort of send out the best way I can describe it, the vibe of it, and then the animals would have the, you know, a similar reaction or a same reaction. So the end result is animal testing is not valid because they communicate telepathically.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you see a flock of birds going, you know, back and forth and weaving and so forth. You know they're communicating telepathically. They have to be.
Mm.
Yes. Well, I mean, the thing is that if you look at documentaries on, you know, wild animal herds, it's like the animals will all be grazing peacefully, and then almost instantaneously all their heads come up at the same moment.
Mm.
Why? Because they're telepathically communicating, and they just are like, suddenly, it's boom, they're on.
Yeah.
And I noticed that with horses, they'll do the same thing. And they communicate telepathically.
Mm-hmm. So did you keep a journal while you were working with people? And did the idea for the book come after you had amassed a certain amount of experience? Or did you always know that you would want to write this down, write down what you were experiencing, and did you keep a journal?
Well, we didn't keep a journal. What we did is we did transcripts of the classes that we did, because we did these different animal classes, and we did transcripts of those. Mm. And then we have a wonderful editor here in Santa Barbara who took all the information, put it into an order where it made some kind of sense, and then we read it out loud to see where missing information was.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was one of the most brilliant things I'd ever done, was having her, you know, having us read it and then seeing where the energy of missing information was, which really made huge, you know, it was such an obvious gap where we needed additional information. And then that we would pull out of our memory banks from some other class or some other animal that we'd worked with.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting things about this work in particular is that when we're doing a class, we're speaking to the energy of the animals that are there and the people that are there and the questions that they have. So doing it as a the beginning of it being a class transcript allowed us to actually speak to the energy of what the people that might be reading it required, the people with animals and also the animals themselves, what information they wanted to share that would let their owners have the information that they required. So doing it that way rather than sitting down just to write from memory allowed us to be also a little more present with the energy of what people required from us in writing the book.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Seems to have worked. We've gotten a lot of great feedback. There's one lady in Minnesota who read the book and went out and became a horse psychic on her own instantaneously, and she did some of the work on her horse, and she took a horse that had been lame for 4 months, and in 30 minutes, he was unlame and has not been lame since.
Hmm. Amazing.
That's very amazing.
Another way to language that whole thing.
So that the book stimulated that in somebody.
Mm-hmm. Right. I might even say, you, as you did the book, you were doing it prayerfully with the intention that what needed to be said would be said.
Well, we were doing it from a lot of what the animals require of us, because one of the things we always ask is, okay, you know, horses, what do you require or desire of us? dogs, what do you require or desire of us? What do we need to share with others so they will know what you're saying?
Do you want to talk a little bit about the various methods that you use in the book? Because you have chapters that go through different methods.
Well, we've done the chapters so that there will be hands-on processes that people can tap into and use to help their animals. And, you know, like I said, the one lady that, you know, that has actually, she's got an internet site now and is having all kinds of success with that as well. But it came from reading this book and tapping into what she sort of had always had an awareness of, but didn't know how to speak to it. And now she actually is able to speak to it. So, you know, we do different chapters in order to make it possible for people to get how it works and to make it work for themselves. Because it's a book, but it's also a way to apply and use this in your life.
And a lot of the processes that Gary's referring to there as some of the chapters, you know, the quadrate of laxation, words that you've never heard or never heard put together before, let alone as a way of doing a process that will help an animal or you. One of Gary's talents and abilities is taking an energy and actually putting it into words in a way that it's usable for other people. So let's say, you know, where we talk about working with some of the horses and doing quadrative laxation and anaphylactic shock. Well, in that particular situation with that particular horse, he would ask the question, okay, what energy is required here? And he would take that energy, and he's got, like I was saying, he has this amazing ability to translate that energy into specific words. So he's asking what energy will unlock the problem that the horse has. And if he can put that into words, then we can all have access to it whenever an energy like that shows up in one of our animals. And that's part of how these chapters came about, or the processes that are in the chapters came about.
Well, let's talk a little bit about you guys as writers, because it's one thing to be accomplished in a field and then to get to write books and have them published. That's another accomplishment separately. Did you, either of you, have a background in writing?
Well, I was an English major when I was in college.
Hmm.
For a lot of years, and then I discovered that wasn't going to make me any money, so I decided I wasn't going to give that up. But I tried writing a number of times, but I always quit because I wasn't as good as Shakespeare. If I couldn't be as good as him, I didn't want to do it.
And for me, I had started doing sort of metaphysical work, or, you know, spiritual work, helping work with people shortly before I went to chiropractic school. And when I was in chiropractic school, I realized that I was saying the same things to people over and over and over, and I went, wow, you know what, it would be really helpful if I could write something that might explain all of this. So I wrote a book based on the sessions that I had and the things that people I thought needed to hear, and I self-published it, and I realized that, you know what, I sort of had the same point of view. It's like, well, I'm not as good as Deepak Chopra, so I'm just going to stop writing now. And then when Gary came along and we started facilitating these other classes, I realized, wow, once again, there's information here that would be so beneficial for people. And I asked a question one day. I said, you know, how could people actually get this information one day when we didn't actually have any books? And I asked it in my head. And about 3 weeks later, Gary said, you know what? Because we're working 3 to 4 weeks out of the month, we don't really have time to write. What if we got our classes transcribed and use those as the basis for a book? And I went, oh, wow, ask and you shall receive does actually work.
That's great. And I love the
beginning of our process of writing books. And since then, we have other things we're writing. Right now, I'm writing a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, you know, it's like I'm about halfway through. And I've been doing that in my spare time, you know, while I'm on planes and things. And it's, you know, it's like I've read it to some of my friends, and they're all, you know, dying for me to finish it up so they can hear the rest of it.
Okay, I have to say, after having read the part of the book that he has done, It is absolutely brilliant because I spent what was available because of the ability to communicate that I wanted to be able to have, and this book communicates more dynamically than almost anything else I've read. And I know people, you know, are supposed to say nice things about their friends. This is not that. This is an awareness of something that is truly something where you read it and you just keep desiring more, such as the energy and the communication style in it.
Hmm. Can you give us a hint about the plot or what it's about?
Well, it's about people who have abilities that we all should have and don't have, and how they got them and where they got them, and maybe a way to tap into them if you can read between the lines.
Hmm. Nice.
The interesting thing about having read it is, if you can read between the lines, that's one aspect, but the lines sort of read between you. You read it and these energies open up to you that you know should be available, but it's a fiction book. So it's really interesting to have an energy be communicated, actually open up to and be more aware of simply by reading it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, fiction gives you a lot of freedom to sometimes say what you really want to say.
Absolutely.
You're listening to KRUU 100.1 FM, listener-supported, open-source, grassroots community radio, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa. And today we're talking to Gary Douglas and Dane Heer, authors of Talk to the Animals, and also Access Energy Transformation Facilitators.
Every time you say that, see, there's the Access Energy is the name of the electric company that brings me my electric. So it's kind of funny every time I hear that. Well, this book, Money is Not the Problem, You Are, sounds extremely interesting. How did you come upon that?
How did we come across the title?
Yeah, or the book itself. I mean, how did you, you know...
It's like, well, what I noticed is, you know, we've worked with a whole lot of people over the years that had, you know, said they had money issues. Dane was one of the main people that I worked with who said he had a money issue. And I would work with somebody who had $10, and I'd work with somebody who had $10 million, and it always boiled down to the same thing, which I thought was very odd. So I began to realize that money really isn't the problem. It's actually the fact that we are refusing to receive. And that's one of the things that I, you know, that's part of the premise of the book, is that basically what are you not willing to receive that would give you the money you desire?
Mm-hmm. Okay, and money does not happiness bring, necessarily.
No, and it's like, but, you know, it's like it doesn't unhappiness bring either. You know, it's mm-hmm. like what, you know, what we look at is it's not about the happiness, and it's not a solution. You know, people say, well, one of the questions we ask is, what does money mean to you? And it's amazing the number of people who go, freedom. And yet, money doesn't give you freedom. Freedom will give you money, however. You know, because if you're willing to be free, then you're willing to receive. And if you're willing to receive, then money comes.
Mm-hmm. So a person...
There's an interesting sort of conundrum where people take a point of view, and then the point of view creates their reality. So if you say, I have no money, how much money are you going to get?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where we came up with the title, because we were sort of stating the truth of what we had perceived with people's money issues, because most people that we worked with regarding money really had no idea and no rhyme or reason about money, nor why they had what they considered their money problem or their money issue to be.
Mm-hmm.
And what we wanted to let people know is, it's not money, guys. It's just your point of view, and that can be changed.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying that a person with $10 million might just have circumstances that brought them that money, but they still might be in an energy of not enoughness?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's like what I noticed. I worked with a lady who had a trust fund, and she had multi-million dollars in her trust fund, right? And she was the most unhappy, miserable person I ever met in my life. And fact, she was one of those people that comes to Access, and I go, please, God, don't let that one come back. You know, but, of course, the ones that I say, please, God, don't let that one come back, they always come back. And
they need it the
most. Because they get some changes, and then they suddenly start to realize there's a different possibility. And I watched this lady over a three-year period of doing Access go from being so sad and so miserable that she couldn't get out of bed in the morning and she couldn't function, and she threw money away in order to try and buy friends. Mm. And I watched her go from being unhappy and miserable to actually learning how to make money, to start a business, to buy properties, and to actually create more income in her life than she'd ever had. And she was creating it. She wasn't just waiting for, you know, the trust fund to take care of her. So it was an amazing experience to watch this woman who had what everybody else would have considered an easy life and a good life be that miserable and that unhappy.
Mm.
Like, money isn't going to make you happy, but, you know, it's like if you'll choose happiness, you'll probably get money.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we do is look up words a lot, and one of the things that happened is I looked up the word passion, and a whole lot of the metaphysical community is telling you to follow your passion.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked it up in the dictionary, and it says passion, to be tacked to the cross as Christ.
Oh.
Oh, well, that explains all my relationships. You know, and it was very amusing to realize that, you know, you follow your passion, you're going to get crucified one way or another. So we ask people to follow, you know, to do what they love, and money will follow. And it's amazing how often that has turned out to be true. It's just wonderful.
Hmm. Well, there's a lot of people nowadays, of course, that are in desperate need of money because they have lost their jobs. And
yes, I know, and it's like the thing is that it's you know, it's like the greatest difficulty I find is people who don't have an ability to choose to be happy and to choose to be grateful for every penny that comes into their life. One of the things I've noticed repeatedly is people go, okay, I got $20, but that's not enough to pay my bill, and then no more money comes in. Well, that's because you stop the energy of the receiving that you had started. You know, you got to realize that energy is something that continues to grow. So you generate $20, you go, wow, how does it get any better than this, instead of, you know, what's wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
So I did a class in New York City, and a lady, you know, had learned this tool. How does it get any better than this? Every time something good happens, you ask the question. Every time something bad happens, you ask the question. And the universe twists things around to make it better. So she went out of the class, and there was a dime in front of the elevator. And she picked it up, and she goes, ooh, how does it get any better than this? And she walked down the street to go to the subway, and she found a $10 bill. And she goes, whoa, how does it get any better than this? And waved down a cab. And she got dropped off in front of her apartment building, and as she was getting out, she looked down in the gutter. She could see something glittering in the gutter, so she reached down and picked it up. It was a diamond bracelet.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
She then went from, how does it get any better than this, to, oh, it can't get any better than this.
Hmm.
That is not a question. You got to ask a question in order for the universe to provide for you.
Okay, so then it stopped because she said it can't get any better than this.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
Okay, that's a good.
I think that's
good.
A whole lot of what's happening with a whole lot of the people that are having money problems at the moment. You know, it's like I've worked with numbers of people. I just worked with a lady yesterday whose husband had died about 8 years ago, and she her finances had been dying ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so she started to talk to me about this, and I went, okay, so did you decide you didn't want to live after your husband died? And she went, oh, my God, yes, I did. Well, you can't make money if you want to die.
Hmm.
But you got to be willing to live, and you got to be willing to have some joy in it in order to have the money.
Yeah.
I'm interested in what you just said, that you have to ask a question. A lot of prosperity teachers teach that instead of asking for something, you are in gratitude for something. So thank you for the money that's already on its way to me, is what you say.
You have to have the gratitude as well. But if you ask a question, the universe will, you know, the universe is on our side. It really wants to support us. But we don't let it.
Mm-hmm. So it's not...
the door for allowing the universe to support us. It's like if you're walking down a road and or you're walking down the hall and there look like there are just walls on either side and you're heading towards the place where you've decided is, and you don't want to go there, if you ask a question, all of a sudden some doorway opens to one side or the other that actually is a different possibility than the sort of the trench you were heading in.
Right. And so instead of asking the universe, how can I make enough money to scrape by, you might ask, how can I make $200,000 next year?
Or one of the interesting things we found about in asking these questions with the how, what most of us do is we try to figure it out. So there's a question that we've suggested, and we also put it in the Money's Not the Problem You Are book, which would be, what would it take for this to show up? Because what would it take doesn't necessarily involve you doing step by step by step. What would it take might be, oh, I'll let the universe give it to me. Or I'll let it come from some other place, rather than I'm going to have to be the one who's going to have to do step by step by step to make it all happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we see a whole lot of people having difficulty with. They look for the how as though there's a path that will get you what you want, rather than there's a different possibility available if you ask, what would it take for this to show up?
Interesting.
It's interesting because with this economic downturn, about 90% of the people who were involved in Access before the downturn are still having the same income. Their income has not dropped. Many of them, their portfolios have dropped in value, but their income has not, which is really strange. But that's what's happening because they have this point of view, okay, so what would it take for my income to continue? What would it take for my income to grow?
Mm-hmm. Do you see it as a symbiotic relationship between steps and, I don't know what to call it, grace or just the flow of energy? Or is it all grace?
If you're in gratitude and you're in question, then the universe will do everything it can to provide for you. Now, every molecule in the universe is conscious, but do we assume that?
No, we don't.
You know, it's like we function from the point of view, my car, my house, my furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is it really yours?
Mm-hmm.
Because in truth, do you go to work in order to support it, or does it go to work to support you? You know, the reality is, you dust it, you clean it, you take care of it, and you go to work to make sure you can do that.
Right.
You know, it doesn't, so who owns who?
Good question.
So, back to...
Hey, Dean, tell them what we do when we buy something.
So, here's a great one. When you buy something, you want to ask the thing, if I buy you, will you make me money? I know it's sort of, wow, like, really? You can ask something? Yeah, absolutely, because every molecule in the universe is conscious. So everything that you could potentially buy has the consciousness to communicate with you. And if you ask it, if I buy you, will you make me money? You'll know whether it's going to contribute an energy to your life that will actually bring more money in to your life. And it may not mean that you buy this thing and then you're going to sell it for more money. It could be, like, for example, in the case of buying a really nice outfit that makes you look good. It might be that your body loves it, so your body's willing to receive more. And it could be that people look at you and go, wow, that person must have money. They look so good in their clothes, or any of a number of other things. But the thing knows if when you buy it, it will make you money. And if you ask, you'll know too. And our suggestion would be, whatever you're going to buy, ask it if it will make you money and buy only those things that say yes.
Now, does this mean I can ask my car what's wrong with it?
Absolutely. Now, your willingness to receive a different answer might be the determination of whether you can get what the car is trying to communicate. But what you might might ask it is, okay, what's it going to take to fix you? Because if you focus on what's wrong with you, oftentimes what happens is you get more of that wrongness.
But if
you say, what will it take to fix this, what will it take to change it, then you're opening the door for that possibility to occur, not just showing you more of what's wrong.
I had a 71 Cadillac Eldorado convertible that was absolutely stunning. It was my play car. And my daughter, you know, my ex-wife asked my daughter to move out from her and move in with me. So she came to live with me. And 6 miles to the gallon was not a good car for her to be driving, especially since I was paying for the gas. So I went, okay, so you know what, car, would you like to own somebody else? I asked the car if it would like to own somebody else, and it said yes. And so I went, okay, cool. So, what should I sell you for? It goes, $9,000. I went, $9,000? That's more than I thought you were worth. $9,000. So that afternoon, my daughter took it to the beach. A man saw her in the car and said, is there any chance that car is for sale? And she said, yes, my dad just decided to sell it. Can I have your telephone number? She gave him my telephone number, just in case it was something other than car buying. And a guy called me from Northern California and wanted to know if I was really willing to sell it. I said, yes. I told him how much. And he said, would you take less? And I said, absolutely not. And he came down and he bought the car. Now, this took a total of 4 days and no advertising.
Well, the car knew what it was worth.
The car, would you like to, you know, it's like, you know, people don't ask their houses, is there somebody else you would like to own? Because, you know, it's like you think you own the house.
Yeah.
Do you really own the house or do you just work in order to live in it?
That's neat. I like that.
Yeah, so the book today is
Looking at things, but it does seem to work.
Right. So the book today is Talk to the Animals, but really you can talk to everything.
Yes, that's right. And that's the whole idea. You can talk to everything. And everything, because everything has a consciousness in it, it will tell you what is possible.
You know, I almost forgot to ask if you wanted to do a reading. Do you want to read a section just for 4 or 5 minutes?
Sure. Why don't you pick one, Dan, and you read it.
Okay. Well, we have a few here, so I'm just flipping through to see what might be the...
And while he's flipping through, Gary, will you tell us how listeners can find out more about your work?
Yes, you can go to accessconsciousness.com, which will tell you more about the work, and we also have CDs and DVDs and, you know, books and all kinds of things for sale, and on horsetv.com, there's the first pilot episode of Conscious Horse, Conscious Rider that I made, and it's on there, and I think it's number 11 or something. You can go into.
And you guys are traveling all over the world giving access seminars.
We are. So it's accessconsciousness.com.
Accessconsciousness.com. Okay.
Yes. So I'm ready whenever you are.
Okay, go ahead just for 5 minutes.
The part called Everything Desires to Give to You. Every animal, every plant, every structure on this planet has consciousness and desires to give to you. If you're unwilling to receive that, you miss out on what they want to give you, and you also limit your ability to receive in every area of your life. You limit your awareness, you limit the amount of money you can have, you limit what you can experience, and you limit what's possible for you. We like to work with people to get them to the point where they can receive everything that's out there. I once met a lady whose entire house was white. It was spectacular in its whiteness. She had only white flowers in her house and in her garden. There were white impatiens growing around her house, and sometimes they'd have light rims of pink, because that's how they grow. She'd have her gardener rip them out if they had even the slightest touch of pink in them. She said, I don't like colored flowers. I only like white. Does she have the ability to receive? Well, yes, as long as it's white. It's fine that she only wants white flowers, but the statement, I don't like colored flowers, is a problem. When you make a judgment like that, you eliminate what you can receive. It's like saying, I only like thoroughbred horses. That means you can only receive what a thoroughbred can give you. You won't receive what another horse can give to you. Is that a limitation? Yes, it is. If you say, I only like Chihuahuas, or I only like Corgis, are you limiting what you can receive? Yes. If you like dogs, and you like cats, and you like horses, then you're willing to receive a whole lot more. Animals have a tremendous amount of information. They have tremendous gifts they can give to us if we're willing to receive them. The more we're open to receiving the energy and the information they give us, the more we'll be able to receive everything in the universe. Horses, in particular, like to give us energy. They want to take care of us. It's part of their job to nurture our bodies and feed us energy. When we don't receive their energy, it invalidates them. It makes them feel useless. They get frantic and upset. They don't understand what's wrong, that they're unable to give energy to us. This is what happens to horses that are on rent strings. They become apathetic and crazed because there's no one receiving the gift that they are. Have you ever noticed that sometimes after you ride a horse, you feel really expanded, joyful, and happy? Why does that occur? It's because you've been willing to receive from the horse. Everything on this earth has consciousness. Everything. If you start to function with the consciousness of things, they will tell you what they would like and how to function with them. This is especially true of animals. If you acknowledge the consciousness of animals, they will start to behave differently with you than they do with other people. Animals can help us learn to function with the earth. They can teach us how to be stewards of our planet instead of its destroyers. That's the value of being able to talk to them.
Very good.
Lovely. Thank you. That was a good selection.
Yes, it was.
Really communicates the spirit of the book and what we've been talking about today.
So, exactly. So, you know, I mean, that's the whole idea of the book. It's like literally, you know, what can we learn from the animals? Well, we were in Australia recently, and they had a big oil spill off the coast in Australia.
Mm.
And about 10 days later, 60 pilot whales beached themselves.
Oh.
And, you know, and it's like everybody was going, oh, it's terrible. Why would they do that? And I, you know, so it's like I tapped into them, and I said, okay, so why are you doing this? And their answer was, people need to wake up. They're killing us with this junk they're doing. They've got to stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd rather die than live like this.
Hmm.
And I mentioned that to the people that were in the class, and they were sort of startled and stunned. But, you know, nobody's listening. Now, it's like I always get a kick out of Greenpeace going out to fight to save the whales. Why don't you educate the whales? When you hear this noise, this means the guys are coming to kill you. Die.
Right. Swim away, far away.
Assume they're not smart enough to hear what we have to say.
Mm-hmm.
There was a documentary on recently on, I think it might have been Channel 12, which is our public station, about some place where these killer whales were helping the whalers to they would bring the other whales to the whalers so that they could kill them, the killer whales were. And it was really interesting. It really happened. It really did.
Yeah. Well, killer whales, that's their job, is to kill other whales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if we just, you know, acknowledge the fact that they have an awareness, perhaps we could create something different.
Mm-hmm. I have a composer friend in Seattle who took his young students out and composed music for the orca whales there and piped the music. No, it didn't. Sorry, I'm misspeaking. They just played the music on the cliff on Orcas Island where the orcas go by, and the orcas stopped and congregated, and more of them came and just listened to it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that was neat.
I think they called their friends telepathically.
Yeah.
Because they all came around.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that we've got to get clear on. It's like, if they can receive telepathically from one another, why can't they receive telepathically from us?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we not communicating telepathically with them?
Mm-hmm. And I believe that they were receiving not only the music and enjoying the music, but enjoying the love and the intention to connect.
I'm sure they were, because, mm-hmm. like, literally, you know, it's like, what is their point of view in life? They love life, do we?
It was like bees.
We destroy it.
Yeah, that's right. Like the bees, the honeybees that go back to the hive and do a little dance and tell the other bees where the flowers are. And I watched that when I was in college. They had an apiary, and they, you know, you could see them doing it. It was really cool. It really was.
I've never seen that. Ants do that too, don't they?
Probably.
They have scouts. And
yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, this has just been a wonderful conversation. Fascinating. Thank you so much for calling in.
Yes, we really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us on. It's been a pleasure. And, you know, I hope some people will find the gift in the book that will make their lives with their animals much better and the life of their animals much better.
Mm-hmm. Well, animals bring us so much pleasure. Well, thank you again. And let's close with a quote from Caroline.
Okay. Not using your smile is like having $1 million in the bank and not having a checking account.
That's great.
That's great.
I thought that would fit in this time pretty
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that did fit in very well. Well, be well, fellas, and thank you again.
So much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you're listening on Friday, stay tuned for James Moore and Planet Erstwhile. If you're listening on Monday, stay tuned for The Colt Show with Stephen Colt. Thanks for listening. You're listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM. Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writer's Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.